I'm Alan Thorpe.
And I'm David Rogers, and together we host the WeatherPod.
In each episode, we invite a leading expert to help investigate how public, private, and academic sectors can work together to produce weather information of value to business and society.
Timely, accurate, and focused weather information and related services have enormous value across all areas of human activity.
It can increase the efficiency and profitability of business, help save lives and improve safety on land, at sea and in the air, and predict the spread of life-threatening diseases.
Now, as climate change increases the frequency and impact of extreme weather events, weather information is crucial to build social and economic resilience.
At major weather forecasting centres such as ECMWF, the UK Met Office, and NOAA in the US, ensemble predictions are being used by forecasters to explore the range of plausible future weather situations and their probability. Access to these multiple ensemble predictions is a vital part of a global interactive forecasting system, or GIFS for short. Back in the early 2000s, it was realised that creating an online database of near real-time ensemble predictions from the major centres would enable researchers to find ways to improve forecasting skill. This resulted in the creation of the ThorpeX Interactive Grand Global Ensemble, or TIGI for short. Today, we've invited David Richardson into the WeatherPod studio. David is one of the main architects of TIGI, and so the ideal person to discuss the development of the project and its future potential and possibilities. He has over 35 years' experience in weather forecasting research and operations at the UK Met Office, and until recently as head of evaluation at the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, ECMWF.
David, welcome to the WeatherPod.
Yes, very warm welcome to you, David, to the WeatherPod. Great to have you with us today.
Well, it's very nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me onto the WeatherPod.
So, David, before we delve into the history and evolution of GIFS and TIGI and all the other acronyms that we have, could you describe what TIGI is today, including the name change, and also explain to listeners who use it, who uses it, and how it is actually being used, David?
So TIGI nowadays is known as the International Grand Global Ensemble. TIGI. Of course, it started off many years ago as part of the ThorpeX project, which was a very successful 10-year WMO project. That came to an end in 2014, but TIGI was such a successful part of that, and we'll go into what TIGI is in a moment, that it has just carried on really going from strength to strength since. And so 10 years after the end of TIGI, of ThorpeX, TIGI is still going strong. So now the International Grand Global Ensemble, what is it today? Well, as it always has been since the beginning, TIGI is a database that collects together in near real time the operational global ensemble forecasts, weather forecasts from all the major producing centers around the world. So there are 13 big global NWP centers who produce these ensemble forecasts of the future weather for 10 to 15 days ahead. And as they produce their forecasts, they send the data to two archive centers, one at ECMWF in Reading, and one at the Chinese Met Agency in Beijing. And they keep that data there as an archive for researchers to use free, with no charge, open access for research purposes. And what makes TIGI unique and so useful is that the data from all these different centers is collected in one place in a common format. It is very easy to find, to access and download the data. And researchers can do a huge amount of research based on that data to better understand many aspects of weather forecasting and atmospheric behavior. And the data is there right back to the beginning of TIGI, so 2006, right up to date. And just to give you a few figures that highlight the amount of data and how it's used. The archive at the moment is continually growing, of course, but it's now about 8 petabytes of data. So that's a huge amount of data. In numbers of different fields, that's 10.5 billion different fields that you can, if you want, retrieve from the Tiki archive and work on. We have to date, or at the moment, something like 3,500 active users of the Tiki archive, and they are spread all around the world, from national Met services who want to understand the performance of forecasting systems, and very importantly from academia. So there are many university researchers who take this data and can do many types of studies. We had several hundred journal articles come out based on the Tiki data. And it's, as I said, it's still going strong. We've had, to give you an idea, there's something like 50 journal articles just in the last year that wouldn't have been written without being able to access this Tiki data. And they are looking at all different types of forecasting challenges and trying to understand what our capabilities are, where the weaknesses are, and what we can do to improve the quality of our forecasts. And this all relies on the big data archive that we have in Tiki.
So just a quick follow-up, if I may. If you're a user, you download the data, do you, to your local server and work on it there? Is that how it operates?
That's right, yes. So the Tiki is the archive, and it provides an interface to access the data. But you take the data, you pull it to your home institute, the data that you need. So obviously you don't need to take the whole lot. You select exactly what you want, which fields, which area, and then you can take it home to your institution and do as you want with it for your research.
Great. I want to just dwell on the history a little bit of how it started and track back to the sort of inception of the project. And that's partly because David and I were very involved actually in the development of the parent program, research program ThorpeX, which is, as you point out, a WMO, World Meteorological Organization research program. And discussions on ThorpeX and what it was trying to achieve started, I guess, after the year 2000, leading up to 2004. So there was a couple or 3 years where discussions took place as to what it was going to focus on, and it eventually focused on how to improve weather predictions up to 2 weeks ahead, which at the time, you know, still continued to be a major important focus for weather forecasting centres. And as I say, David and I were involved at that time, and as part of that effort, this idea of what we called at the time a global interactive forecasting system, or GIFS, came to the fore and started to be talked about as something that we should look into. So I just wanted to ask my co-host David his recollections of our thinking at the time as to what GIFS was all about.
I think it's all, in a way, it was all in the name, because one global meant that you wanted to bring as many parties together as possible. Interactive, and that was an interesting beginning, that thinking about how you could alter the forecasting system in real time, which we'll maybe come back to in a minute. And the forecasting system, which was, at the time, when you know, David, you've mentioned, of course, ensemble prediction, and we just sort of use the phrase now as if we, you know, it's kind of the common language, and this is the forecasting system. But at the time, it was at the very beginning of bringing ensembles, you know, the idea of having you know, be able to realize the forecast by running a model multiple times with different initial states. And the very few centers that had started this really had the capacity to be able to create an ensemble sufficiently large that you could really argue that this was, you know, the way to do this. They were very relatively small ensembles, probably with the exception of ECMWF, which I think had set the bar very high in terms of the number of members of the ensemble that you needed. So an obvious thought was, well, all of these different global centres are trying this. Why not get them to actually pool their resources, actually put this together? And as I recollect, and Alan can disabuse me of this, but we had quite a lot of opposition at the beginning from different centres, all thinking, well, what's the point of putting different models together? That there really wasn't going to, you weren't going to learn very much from this. But somehow we prevailed, and we got people to start sharing their ensemble data. And of course, you know, the rest, as they say, is history, because it proved to be, as you have just very eloquently highlighted, it's still today an incredibly useful resource. So it probably was one of the best things that came out of our initial ideas about ThorpeX. It got global centers not so much focused on competing with each other, but actually collaborating with each other. And it provided an opportunity, and I think the interactive bit was an interesting one, because we were very keen on trying to test out whether you could assimilate data from depending upon the particular system that you were trying to forecast, and do that on the fly. That, I think, is still an open question. Perhaps the technology has evolved to the point where it might make more sense, but it wasn't the most successful part of what we did, but certainly this evolution into Tigi was extremely successful. But if I recall that correctly, Alan.
Well, yes, I mean, I think you did. And, you know, this idea of using an initial stab at the forecast to, or a technique where you could detect regions of the atmosphere that were somehow critically important to make measurements, to make observations, so that perhaps even enhanced observations, so that a forecast several days later would benefit from those observations and improve the forecast, so-called targeted observations, was very strong at the time. But the interactive, I think, was, as you say, was very much how can we get the number of systems from different centres actually together. And there was one thing I would add is, at the time we sort of, I suppose, naively imagined a world where this was being done in real time. So actually the forecasts were being shared amongst the centres as the forecasts were being generated, and the end users, before the end users ultimately got that information. And so that there was a much bigger collection of data, forecast data now, available to be able to make the you know, the specific user forecast that were needed. And again, as you said, I think particularly the idea of a real-time collection got some resistance, because obviously there's, to some extent, each forecasting centre has its own users, has its own requirements, and they weren't particularly keen on, if you like, sharing things around the world before they'd had chance to interact with their own users. So the real time, actually, the real time aspect, I think, was a bit of a tricky one. But, and I perhaps ask you, David, just to, you use the phrase near real time, I think, in your description of Tigi. So leading on from what I've said, maybe you could just say briefly, what did you mean by near real time?
So the main Tigi archive is aimed for research. So it's for trying to understand the forecasts and improve them. Near real time means the forecasts can be accessed 3 days behind after the time that they are generated. So they're not meant for use for looking at tomorrow's forecast or the current forecast, but they are there in very close to real time. So the people who are studying recent weather events can access them and, you know, while it's fresh in the mind, understand them. And also so that if you're trying to accumulate information, then you can download it as an ongoing event. One of the reasons for saying near real time and allowing this 2 or 3 day window is to give time to actually collect the data together from the different centers. And sometimes it doesn't always arrive for one reason or other. You have to chase the centers who are providing it up to get them to resend the data. And of course, things are running generally fairly smoothly now, but especially in the early days, there was quite a lot of back and forth in trying to get the data and establish it and get it in the right place at the right time. And the couple of days window also gives you the chance to just sort that out and make sure everything's there. So that's why it's real near real time. There have been parts which have been exchanged in real time for some experimental activities. So when it's been possible, of course. So for supporting various research experiments, if people have wanted to look at the data in real time, then as much as it's been available in real time, that's been allowed for specific events. And we might come back to this a little bit later, but tropical cyclone forecast track data has been made available in real time for particular applications. And just on the real time, although TIGI itself is in near real time and not quite real time, the centers who produce the Global Ensemble Forecast do distribute some of this data to everybody now in real time as part of the WMO integrated prediction and processing system. So they do make their data available, a certain amount of it, core data, to everybody in real time. Then it is up to the centers to pull the data down from the different locations rather than finding it all in one place, but it can be put together in real time for users.
And just to be clear, when you say available to everybody, what you meant by everybody is National Meteorological Services. Is that right?
At the moment, most of it is National Meteorological Services. In the some centres provide their data with no restrictions at all, completely open and free data. And the WMO has recently established a new unified data policy, which has what is known as core data. Core data is free and open to anybody for any use. And part of that core data will be a core set of ensemble forecast data. So once that's properly up and running, and the policy was only established last year, a core amount of ensemble data in real time will be available to anybody for any use without restrictions.
Good, that's good. Can we just move on, David, to, if you like, a bit more of the scientific rationale? We've talked about a global ensemble. We talked about a multi-model ensemble, which sort of means something perhaps to those in the field, but and is perhaps a bit obscure for others. Could you just say a little bit about what does it mean, a multi-model ensemble, and why, in a sense, is that the ability to have that a bit of a scientific step forward?
Well, let's start with just a quick recap on what an ensemble forecast is. We know the atmosphere, or perhaps more generally, the Earth system, the atmosphere, ocean and land, which all interact with each other, is a chaotic system. So this is the famous butterfly effect. And if you make a forecast starting from very slightly different starting conditions, then your forecast may diverge in a few days and you get quite different forecast outcomes. So that's the basis for why we run ensembles. We run a set of forecasts from very slightly different starting conditions, all consistent with what we know about the current state of the atmosphere, but of course that knowledge isn't perfect. So we run a set of, at ECMWF it's 50 forecasts, in other places it's in the tens, 20 to 50 forecasts, and they allow us to look at what the range of forecast states can be in the coming days. So in that sense, we're taking account of the uncertainty in the atmosphere and the chaotic nature. But of course, the computer models we use to make these forecasts, numerical weather prediction models, are also not perfect. They're approximations to the real world. They typically run on a global grid with spacings of 10 to 30 kilometers. They don't represent all the precise details of what happens inside a cloud, which of course happens on much smaller scales. So there are uncertainties and errors in the forecasts that develop because your model is an approximation. And of course, these errors then, just like the ones from the initial conditions, can propagate forward in the forecast and make significant differences. So we find, all centers find, that if you just perturb the initial conditions and you use one model, you don't get as much dispersion in the forecast as you should do. You're missing some potential solutions. Now, most centers are now trying to address this by adding perturbations as the model develops to account for this uncertainty in your model. So you know your model's not perfect. You account for that by making perturbations as the model evolves, as well as the ones in the initial conditions. So that's one way to account for the uncertainty, the approximations you have in your model. But of course, another way of doing it is just to combine forecasts run with completely different models. The different global centers, so ECMWF, the Met Office, the National Centers for Environmental Prediction in the US, they all run NWP models, but they're all slightly different. They have different approximations to the real world. They run perhaps on different grids. They have different ways of representing clouds and radiation, etc. So they will have different errors, different potential errors within them. They have different biases. And if we combine the forecasts from the different models, then we're taking account of all these different strengths and weaknesses. And so it's a way, by putting them together, just like putting together perturbations from different starting conditions, we can better represent the full range of potential evolutions. Of course, there's a bit of a caveat there. The models have to have similar skill. You don't want to combine a really good model with a very poor model and somehow degrade the performance. But if your models and most of the big global models are equally valuable, but they all have deficiencies, if they have compensating errors, different biases, they go wrong in slightly different ways, then just putting them all together, of course, gives you a better representation of how the real world can develop and what may happen. So that's the main aspect. That's why we say the word multi-model. You should also remember that the different models use different, what we call data assimilation, different systems to get the initial conditions that you start your forecast from. And these data assimilation systems work differently. Again, it's a different modeling process. By putting them together, you better represent the starting conditions. And then, as David said earlier, all the forecasts, we would love to run huge ensembles, many hundreds, to represent properly the distribution of what could happen. We're limited by computing resources. We have big computers, but they can only run so many forecasts. So a typical ensemble will have 20 up to 50 members. If we can combine all the forecasts from the different centers together, then we just get a bigger ensemble, and so we can get a more precise representation of the distribution of future forecast states. So for all those reasons, in principle at least, a multi-center ensemble forecast system will give you the best possible representation of what can happen.
I think you mentioned earlier there are about 13 centers that are contributing. So is that 13 unique models?
They're not quite all complete. They're all different. But for instance, the Australians run a version of the same model that the Met Office runs. So those two models are closer. They run on a different grid. They will have some differences in the way that the Australians have adapted it for their purposes. But those two are closer than, for instance, the ECMWF model and the American model, which have nothing in common. They've been developed entirely differently or the German model, which is completely different and works on a completely different type of grid. So some models have some more similarities than others, but they're all different in some ways.
I guess it's important just to say, of course, they're all based on our understanding of the laws of physics applied to the Earth system. So actually, the differences you're talking about are, if you like, trying to span a level of uncertainty, but there's a lot of certainty about the basics of those laws of physics.
That's right. They're all based on everything we know about how the atmosphere works. So it's really in the details of how we approximate those in a way that we have to squeeze the forecast into the available computing time. And that's things like the resolution, the grid spacing, how much detail we can represent the various physical processes in, such as the cloud developing, convection, the subtle radiative interactions. So it's compromises we have to make in representing the details of how we know the real world works.
You'd mentioned a lot of research, obviously, and just related to this notion of multi-models, have you seen a lot of research on model development as a result of using the TIGI database? That has it led to an evolution in some centres of the actual model system itself?
It has. One of the big advantages for the operational centres, and we use it a lot at ECMWF, is it allows us to compare the performance of our system against those other global systems around the world. So we, in our operational evaluation of our forecast, we always compare how our ensemble forecast is doing compared with the other leading centres. And where we find we're not quite as good, or other centres are achieving things that we're not able to do, then we have to understand where our weaknesses are. We talk to the other centres, we work out what they've done, we maybe come up with a different solution, but we see where the challenges are and where the potential benefits are. And other centres the same. You know, each can see, it's typical that one centre will be good at something and another centre will be slightly better at something else. And by understanding how the one centre was doing better in some area, then you can see where you need to aim to improve.
But so you can see certainly how TIGI as a huge database is really enabling that. I mean to imagine trying to do that without having TIGI, it's a daunting task. But
that's very difficult. I mean, you sit with your own model and in your own model world, and you can compare your own model to the real world, but you don't know where you're missing out on potential quick wins or potential solutions that somebody else might have found. The other big advantage of TIGI is that it makes all this data available not just to the operational centres, but to academia around the world. And there you get academics who wouldn't necessarily be interested or have the facility to look at how global numerical weather forecasts work. But now the data is accessible to them. They can look at it and they can spot things that maybe we haven't spotted, errors or uncertainties or sources of error in those forecasts, which then they can feed back to us and help our model developers address the issues.
It strikes me from what you've said and that's the idea of having the word interactive in the original title of the Global Interactive Forecasting System. You've just described a great way in which it is interactive, because the centres are sharing knowledge about each other's characteristics of their models, and therefore there's a feedback loop there to improve the models because of that interaction and understanding of the different models. I hadn't quite thought of that before, but it wasn't so bad an idea to call it interactive.
I think that's right. It really brings interactions between the global centres together, and they really do keep a very close watch on what's going on in the other forecast. Interactions with the academic community, which I think was behind the idea of developing the TIGI archive, but maybe we didn't see it as the where the word interactive came from, but that's been valuable. And also interactions with users in the other national Met services who don't produce these global forecasts, but they now have access to the archives of them. So there are people in centres around the world who don't have the experience in running models, but now they can get a lot of experience in understanding them, and also in developing products based on the ensembles. Ensembles generate a huge amount of information, but one of the big challenges is how you extract useful decision-making guidance from this massive amount of information. And you can do work on that, you know, in centres wherever you are around the world, whether you're the producer of the data or just a user who's usually more close to the end decision makers than we are in our sort of NWP little world.
I guess that's an important point, David, that particularly for, say, countries that have poorer facilities, maybe less developed countries, can't afford to run their own models. But as you say, can get understanding about what ensembles are about by looking at this database and trying out ideas of developing information for their own users. So it's a good example of how it could be used in the developing world as well.
Yes, and there are examples in some of those journal articles, many journal articles I was talking about, of applications, how you use the rainfall forecast from TIGI to drive a hydrological model to make flood forecasts in river basins in India, in Africa, in South America, where the user can use their own, in this case, say their own hydrological model, which they know about, they run in-house, it's tuned for their different catchment basins. But you need rainfall to drive those. You pull that down from the TIGI archive, and then you can work out the quality, potential quality of your flood forecasting based on your own hydrological models. That's just one example of how you can use TIGI to understand the forecast potential for forecasting important extreme weather events in your own locality with your own downstream, if you like, application model.
I was struck by looking at you published the statistics on the use of TIGI, and I was struck by, I mean, the usual, you know, large countries that can really utilize this dominate, but I was surprised at how many countries that you would almost imagine not having almost any capability to actually have people who are actually utilizing this. So it's clearly it's reaching many, and there's also, of course, a lot of potential then for it to reach many more in terms of how the database can be used for research in many, many different countries.
That's right. If you look at a map of the distribution of where you find those users, it's all continents, and it's far more of the world is covered by countries that have some users of the data, who might be just one or two people sitting in a university, or it might be the National Met Service that's trying to understand how best to use, or as a training exercise to train its forecasters on what an ensemble is and how to use ensemble data. It's a really valuable resource for that as well.
David, could you give some other examples of how TIGI is making it possible for scientific research findings to be made available?
Well, let me mention a couple. One is tropical cyclones. I think one of the big areas of research using TIGI data has been tropical cyclones. And just some of the examples of things that they've been doing recently. The first, as we talked about earlier, is comparing the performance of the different forecasting centres on predicting tropical cyclone tracks. What are the errors in the track and how good are you at predicting where the landfall will be? And one of the the recent studies we had compared three global centres, so in this case the ECMWF, the Met Office, and the NSEP from the USA. And it led to a better understanding of some of the strengths and weaknesses of the different ensemble systems. So the at that time, a couple of years ago, the Met Office and NSEP forecasts were rather underspread, so they didn't get a big enough dispersion of the tracks that showed where these tropical cyclones might make landfall. And at that time, ECMWF was giving you a better range of solutions, so it really did properly cover where the tracks were likely to end up, so where would be impacted. And doing this comparison allowed both NSEP and the Met Office to understand where they were lacking in their ensemble dispersion, generating perturbations. So both of them have made changes to their forecasting system so that now they now better represent the uncertainty in the forecasts. They have a better spread and they better cover the range of where tropical cyclone tracks will go. So those were benefits they got from understanding where and how they were lacking in generating the perturbations. Then the question is, as we said, multi-model ensembles are, in principle, of course, should be better. You lump all the forecasts together, they should give you benefits. That assumes the models are independent, have different types of errors and biases. It's important, of course, to show that that's true. And so looking at some of these studies, we do combine the tropical cyclone tracks from the different centres, and you look at the probability forecasts to give you the likelihood of it making landfall in different locations. Are those probabilities sharper, better, more reliable if you combine all the centres? And the answer is yes, but you have to do the work to make sure that these, to confirm that's true. And we found yes, and yes, because the different centres tend to be, some centres work better in some basins, so maybe one centre is good at Atlantic cyclones, another centre slightly better in the Northwest Pacific, because it's just its model errors are slightly different in that location. But the multi-model, by combining them, takes the benefits of the best centres without being degraded too much by those who are slightly less good. So if you take the multi-model system, you get good forecasts in both the Northwest Pacific and the Atlantic. So that shows that the forecasts are good, and the benefits of the multi-model. And then where that leads us to, also using these tracks from the TIGI archive allows us to better look at the probability forecasts from ensembles, which are still the use of ensembles, although TIGI's been around for 10, 20 years now. As you said, David, at the beginning, understanding how to use ensembles still now needs more work. They're not being exploited to the full. But a lot of work recently looking at probability forecasts from the TIGI ensembles is trying to show how better to extract the key information. In this case, it would be things about like tropical cyclone landfall, where landfall is most likely, and how you might there then lead into decisions about evacuating or whatever. And understanding that, then back to the operational side, having shown that tropical cyclone tracks and that multimodal tropical cyclone tracks are important, and coming back to what I said earlier about core data and the new WMO unified data policy, tropical cyclone tracks from the global ensembles will be part of this core data, and the evidence that we have that's shown the value of the multimodal ensembles is one of the reasons why we know this has to be the case. And so tropical cyclone tracks from all global ensembles will be WMO core data. It'll be open and free to everybody. And people will then be able to use and make operational forecasts based on these multimodal ensembles. So that's one example. Lots of other work on all sorts of different aspects of tropical cyclones. And tropical cyclones is just one area that's used TIGI forecasts.
I was curious, picking up, I mean, you mentioned two areas of the globe where this is being done. And for me, there's a lot of activity in South Asia. So with tropical cyclone forecasts and other applications of ensemble predictions. Do you recall much work going on there from the utilization of the TIGI database and research?
Well, there is work going on in all basins, but in South Asia, I think there's been some very recent work looking at the tropical cyclones both impacting in the Philippines and in Vietnam, and how we're also moving towards looking more at the impact. So it's not just the tropical cyclone on the track, but what is the impact of a tropical cyclone hitting a location? And for that, you start looking at the precipitation involved, the winds. There is work starting on storm surges, but we're not quite there with the same level of detail. But looking at the precipitation impacts from tropical cyclones using the information from the TIGI database is going on, for instance, in Vietnam. Also in the Southern Hemisphere, in Mozambique, Madagascar region, where they've had a few terribly destructive tropical cyclones in the last few years. And better understanding the impacts is a key area of activity, as is, again, better understanding how to make really clear warnings and give early alerts so that people can prepare to take actions to mitigate against these. Because we can't stop the tropical cyclones happening. What we have to do is allow enough time and give enough detail for people to be able to take action to reduce as much as possible the damage that these cause.
I think it's interesting, perhaps in passing, I'll make a comment that you've given really a very good exposition of why it's important internationally to have a diversity of modelling systems, because they bring their slightly different but unique biases and attributes, maybe good attributes as well. But the diversity of those systems, because it would be perhaps we don't need every country in the world to have its own global ensemble to contribute. But to have a degree of diversity seems to be very important. And I think that's something that we need to remember as we go forward, when the world is considering other ways of forecasting, maybe using artificial intelligence and machine learning. But we've covered a lot, David, and I wanted to draw our discussion to a close. But before that, perhaps you could say a little bit about how you see TIGI developing in the future. Where do you think it's going to go from here? And in a sense, you know, to come back to an earlier comment I made, do you think there's any sort of chance of more real-time sharing of ensembles to make it closer to real-time?
Okay, well, TIGI itself, TIGI is still going strong. It's hugely valuable. So the TIGI archive as a research archive will continue. We've got agreement from all the centres. It will continue for at least another 5 years. This is typically a rolling 5-year plan. So there's TIGI will continue. We do have a challenge with data volumes as the ensembles are getting to finer and finer resolutions. So we'll have to do a bit of work to deal with those. And TIGI evolves, so the variables, the data that we save in TIGI is evolving. People are using it more for applications. I mentioned hydrology earlier. So we need to make sure that we have the right data in TIGI that's suitable for these applications. So the amount of, we might change a bit the data we put in it. Anyway, it will continue, and there will be a great amount of work on, we expect, work on research will continue. Operationally, well, more generally on the operational side, I think ensembles are here to stay. They're very much the core of current numerical weather prediction, and they will be here for a long time. On the we talked mostly about medium range here, because TIGI is medium range, which covers out to 2 weeks or so ahead. On the longer time scales, we already have operational multi-model ensemble forecast coordinated by WMO. So we have lead centers for both sub-seasonal forecast, by which we mean sort of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks ahead, and for seasonal forecasts, which are out to 1, 2, 3 seasons, up towards a year ahead. And there, operationally, we do exchange the ensemble forecasts for different centers, and we have one so-called lead center which collects that information, combines it, and makes multi-model forecast products which are made available to all WMO members. Why it's happened on the longer ranges is really, at first at least, is really for a couple of reasons. One, technical, there's less data to move around because the forecasts are usually for weekly or seasonal averages, because the resolution of the models is smaller. So it's more pragmatically, it's easier to do. And also there's a less of a condensed time window to make your operational forecasts available. If you're making a seasonal forecast, you've got a few days, week or two to put it all together and make a good forecast. Why it's not happening quite like that on the shorter range is partly because of these technical challenges. The time scale is very quick to make a forecast available. You have to get it out in a couple of hours. So you have to work very quickly. And there's a huge amount of data to push around. So we have practical challenges to achieve that in real time. And the other reason it was done first at the longer ranges is model errors that we talked about tend to evolve with forecast lead time. So the errors are much bigger when you get towards a seasonal timescale, and the errors in the different models have compensate more significantly at the longer range. So shorter range, as I said, the WMO has a new data policy, which is already defining that certain ensemble fields must be made available to everybody in real time. So that's one first step. Ensemble data is available to people. Now, the putting it all together at the moment, that's down to the users to collect the forecast data together. It's not yet done by a lead center. We have a pilot project starting in WMO to look at making multi-center forecasts at the shorter ranges in real time. That will start off by just taking the so-called the deterministic forecast, the single forecasts from each center, putting them together, displaying them all on a common map projection, common labeling, common contouring, etc., and perhaps combining those into a multi-center ensemble system. It starts with the single forecast, again, for the practical reasons of there's just a lot of data to put together. So that's one operational step. What more will happen in future? Well, big changes coming up are use of cloud technologies, pushing the forecast data into the cloud, and this idea of, rather than pushing the data to the user, bringing the user to the data and making compute power available next to where the data is. And if we can get these technologies working, in WMO, we're working on the so-called WIS2 system, so the WMO information system, which is the way of getting this data to users. That's very much going to be using cloud technologies on the internet to transfer data. A lot of data from global ensemble centers is being pushed into various clouds, including commercial cloud providers. So this gives us more scope than we've had in the past to have the data pushed to some central server and then to allow compute access near that, which will allow us to get over this challenge of having to do everything so quickly and move data around so quickly. So I think these give us good potentials in the future for having a more interactive system. And the other thing that the number of the individual centers are doing is providing more interactivity to their own ensembles, to users, So, for instance, by next year, already ECMWF users can see all our maps and charts. Next year, NMHSs, so National Weather Services, will be able to have a more interactive experience with those forecast charts, where they can pan and zoom and tailor the charts to their own area, overlay the fields they want, trim the map to their particular area of interest, even do some processing, for instance, like the probability of a certain amount of rainfall. At the moment, the global forecasting centers have a rather generic set of rainfall more than 10 millimeters a day, whatever it is. But this interactivity will allow users of some of those centers, ECMWS, to go to the web to choose a probability threshold, a rainfall threshold, and look at the chances of that amount of rainfall happening. So that's more of interactivity that you get from a single center. So there are quite a few things in the pipeline that will make the user experience of Ensemble Forecasts significantly more interactive in the coming years.
Are these mostly just visualizations, or are they actually digital? Is it sharing the digital information?
The ECMWF example produces a visualization. So it processes the data in the background, for instance, to make a probability for an event that you define. The output from that will be a map.
Hmm.
The output can be the data as well. But at the moment, that's got a limited, restricted access to it.
I mean, it's a question I raise it because it's kind of a major issue in many developing countries who are developing flood forecasting systems and developing impact-based products, forecasts, and decision support systems. And you need to combine digital information, whether it's digital information on people's vulnerability, it's digital information on the forecast itself. And without that, it becomes moot whether you're actually really able to make much progress in this impact area, because you simply are you're looking at a visualization and you're not being able to combine that. You really would end up digitizing it in order to combine it with the other data that you have, and I somehow feel this is a missed piece in this discussion in general. I mean, it's not about TIGI, it's really just about the whole process of sharing information from global centers to others.
Yeah, so the sharing of the core data is data, is digital data. And the ECMWF already makes a large amount of its ensemble data in its so-called open data service. At 0.4 of a degree at the moment, spatial resolution. So that's available to users to download, and they can trim it to the area they're interested in to somehow reduce the data volume. What we don't, and then we have all the map type products where you can look at the maps on the web, and that really means you don't need to download any data as well. All the processing is done at the center. So those are the two extremes, if you like. One, download the basic data, and two, don't download anything, look at the maps. The in-between bit of doing some processing and then downloading a processed data set is where there's still development to be done at the moment.
But it sounds from what you said that development work is being done, is started.
There are examples of various cloud applications where such things are being tested and tried out, from simple post-processing of your ensemble, taking the products, to much more sophisticated things like running a limited area model in the cloud, which takes boundary conditions and initial conditions from the global centers, and then runs a higher resolution model over an area you like. And there are examples of testing, at least, of doing these where the whole package is just run in the cloud. And then you download from that your forecast outputs. So there's a lot of developments going on.
Well, David, thank you. I think we have to draw to a close, but thank you so much for your insights into this. And it's actually been a kind of the walk down memory lane in one side, and looking back on where this started. And it's amazing that how far you have come with this idea that was purely an idea is now such a fundamental part of how things work. And as you mentioned, that you know that there is no end in sight. I mean, this rolling 5-year commitment is very good, because obviously it means that this is going to just keep going. But we have to draw to a close here. So thank you very much, David, for your insights. It's been great to chat with you today.
Yes, David, thanks so much. And thanks for all your efforts over the years, because you've been very much the architect of this and shepherded it to this successful state. So well done. And I hope that we will hear more about the results and the developments of TIGI as the years go by. So thanks very much for today.
Well, thank you, David and Alan. Thank you especially for kicking the whole thing off in the first place all those years ago, because without the start of ThorpeX, we wouldn't have TIGI, and that wouldn't have led to all the developments that we've made and been talking about. So it has been a real pleasure to talk to you both today. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Well, that concludes this episode of the WeatherPod. We hope you've enjoyed it. Alan and I will be back next month, and in the meantime, please give us your feedback via email to support@gweforum.org.